ॐ सहनाभवतु सहनोभुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा द्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः.
May we work with full energy, may our study be perfect, and may it give us good results. May we never feel ill will towards others. So today we're continuing on with chapter 3. As I've said before, this chapter is not a terribly complex one. It's what we call an operational chapter. It's not dealing so much with the philosophy as in chapter 2 or as we'll see in chapter 4, but it's rather giving us the working principles or the practicalities of how to deal with that philosophy. So in today's verses, Krishna continues to encourage Arjuna to perform his prescribed duties, but today not so much by giving practical arguments as by giving good example. In a nutshell, he says, oh, great souls do it this way. Even I do it myself this way. So why don't you do it this way? That's basically what he's saying. In verses 17 to 19, he explains that the self-realized soul is atmarati and has no duty performed, but still he does it. He does his duty out of a sense of purpose. He does his duty out of a sense of duty. So what does this atmarati, to take pleasure in the self, what does it actually mean? Srila Prabhupada very nicely explains this in his Los Angeles 68 Bhagavad Gita lecture series. I'd like to read it to you. It's very deep. Here it is plainly said by Lord Krishna, the self, one who is taking pleasure in the self. How can we take pleasure in the self? As soon as we engage ourselves with the Supreme Self, that is enjoyment. Anandamaya Vyasat, the Supreme Lord is joyful. Just like if you mix with a joyful society or a joyful person, then automatically you become joyful. There is no necessity of becoming joyful separately. That association will make you joyful. If you mix with a society criminal, automatically you will become criminal. There is no necessity of learning criminality separately. By association you'll do that. Similarly, if you associate with the Supreme Joyful, with Krishna, automatically you become joyful. This is Krishna consciousness. Automatically. There is no need separately how to become joyful. Simply by association. Therefore, here it is said that one who rejoices within, that rejoice is by association with the Supreme, and is satisfied with the self only, with self, myself, what am I? My identity is that I'm an eternal servant of God. As soon as I engage myself in the service of God, that is my self-realization. And if I enjoy in that self-realization, then I have no other duty. Finished. I have finished all duty, all sacrifice, everything complete. It's so sweet the way Prabhupada puts it so clearly in a nutshell that there's no possibility of us separately being happy. It's only by association with Krishna. And we can remember from at our level that devotional service, being the energy of Krishna, is not different from Him. So just by being favorably engaged in devotional service, we're in relationship with Him and we'll feel that bliss. In verses 20 to 24, we see here Krishna is highlighting the importance of great souls and even Krishna Himself providing proper example. In verse 20, he mentions King Janaka. Janaka is Sita's father, the king of Mathila, and he, as Krishna mentions here, attained perfection solely through proper performance of prescribed duties. Of course, he was not an ordinary king. He was a self-realized soul. But still, he performed his duties in a first-class manner for the benefit of his subjects. I'd like to tell you a short story about this king to indicate that although he was performing his prescribed duties in a first-class manner, so the whole kingdom was peaceful and prosperous and on the right track in terms of spiritual realization, even though he was doing everything so perfectly, he was not attached. It's very interesting. His favorite activity as a king and as a devotee was to hear Bhagavatam. So he would every day sit with his Brahmins and they would discuss Bhagavatam. This was his favorite occupation. Everything went on nicely in the kingdom. He had proper personalities taking care of everything. And one day, in the middle of this reading of Bhagavatam, one of his chief ministers burst into the assembly and said, Oh king, the treasury is on fire, the treasury is on fire. So of course treasury means everything. It means all the jewelry that goes with the kingdom, it means all the tax revenue, it means everything. The king just turned to one of his senior aides sitting next to him and says, go and deal with the fire. So and then he went back to listen to Bhagavatam and the other person went out and dealt with the fire. It's just an indication that although he was very expert in performing his prescribed duty, he was in no way attached. He had a higher attachment. And that it was that higher attachment that allowed him to perform his prescribed duty so perfectly. Because his meditation was Krishna, the absolute perfect, then everything he did externally was perfect. Can we keep that till the end of the class? Is it okay? Okay, we'll talk about that later. Nice point. So in verse 21, Krishna is teaching us the Acharya principle. We'll read from Prabhupada's pulpit here. Let's just open up at 321. I find this particularly relevant for us as devotees of ISKCON. Two main things that come to my mind. Perhaps you'd like to share some other ideas after we finish the class. But two things that come to my mind is that our leaders have to be exemplary in their dealings with us. And we have to be exemplary in our dealing with everybody else. One thing that I find is that as ISKCON devotees, in general, we don't tend to have a very strong sense of lokachar. Lokachar means taking into consideration what the ordinary person thinks. This is actually a very strong consideration spiritually. It's given by Rupa Goswami in Nectar of Devotion that we should perform our mundane duties properly. And also Narottam Das Thakur and Prema Bhakta Chandrika, he says that our environment should be made conducive for our spiritual practices by the way that we deal with others. So I find this a very important point, that we're not aware enough of how the average person is seeing us. It doesn't enough in, affect our consciousness or our dealings. Just a thought. Let's read what Prabhupada has to say here. We'll read from the beginning of the purport. People in general always require a leader who can teach the public by practical behavior. A leader cannot teach the public to stop smoking if he himself smokes. Lord Chaitanya said that a teacher should behave properly before he begins teaching. One who teaches in that way is called Acharya, or the ideal teacher. Therefore, a teacher must follow the principles of Shastra, scripture, to teach the common man. The teacher cannot manufacture rules against the principles of revealed scriptures. And then in the last couple of sentences, Prabhupada points out the responsibility of certain personalities in the community. The king or the executive head of the state, the father, and the school teacher are all considered to be natural leaders of the innocent people in general. All such natural leaders have a great responsibility to their dependents. Therefore, they must be conversant with the standard books of moral and spiritual codes. So this we find even in the life of more mundane Mahatmas like Mahatma Gandhi, that he himself practiced this principle. There's a story of a woman who was very disturbed by her son. He just wouldn't eat anything in a regulated way. He was only interested in eating sweets. Sweets. That's all he would eat. So finally, but he had very strong regard for Mahatma Gandhi. He thought of him as a sadhu and a very wonderful person. So his mother decided that she'd take her boy along to Mahatma Gandhi and get him to tell her boy not to eat sweets, or to at least eat them in a regulated way. So she goes along to Mahatma Gandhi with her child and she makes this request. And he says, please come back in 1 week and I will tell your son not to eat sweets. So then the mother thinks, okay, I guess maybe he's too busy to see me or something. So then she comes back in 1 week And he tells the child, you know, you should eat sweets in a regulated way, eat your proper meal, and then have one or two sweets. And then the mother said to him, she was curious, she said, why didn't you say this last week? It would have saved me a trip. Why did you say it? Because I was eating sweets. I was eating sweets. And I wasn't eating them in a regulated way, so how could I instruct your son? So for 1 week he practiced himself, and then he was in a position to actually instruct somebody else. It's a nice lesson there for us. This also reminds me of something very nice said by Sanatana Goswami about Haribhakta Das Thakur. Prabhupada has based this movement very, very strongly on the chanting of the holy name. So that doesn't mean that we can come to the feet of the holy name in a very fallen condition and stay fallen and still expect to have his mercy. There's a certain responsibility, as we see from the Leela of Jagai Madai, that once we have that mercy, we should utilize it to lift ourselves up. But Sanatana Goswami, he spoke something to Haridas Thakur. It's in Antia Leela of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Antia 4, 102-3, if you're interested in the reference. He says there to Haridas, some people behave very well, but do not preach. Others preach, but do not behave properly. You simultaneously perform both duties in relationship with the holy name, by your personal behavior and your preaching. Therefore, you are the spiritual master of the entire world, for you are the most advanced devotee of the Lord. So we can understand from Sanatana Goswami, who is our Sambandha Acharya, that this principle of being able to balance both our acha, or our personal devotional activity, and our pracha, or our preaching, this balancing is important. Otherwise, there won't be the potency. If someone does something but doesn't speak it, it doesn't have so much weight. And if someone speaks it and doesn't do it, it has even less weight. So he's suggesting here that we try and get some balance between the two. In verses 22-24, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is citing himself as an example of dutiful leadership. In fact, he is a supreme authority, and therefore it's not only imperative but also natural that he should shoulder this responsibility. Prabhupada comments on this very nicely in his purport to 24. So we'll have a look at that. It's very sweet. Prabhupada always gives very nice insights into the mentality of Krishna. It's about four lines down. 4-5. When Lord Krishna descends, naturally he deals with such rules and regulations in order to maintain the prestige and necessity of such important performances. The Lord is the father of all living entities, and if the living entities are misguided, indirectly the responsibility goes to the Lord. Therefore, whenever there is general disregard of regulative principles, the Lord himself descends and corrects the society. So Prabhupada is telling us that Krishna is feeling some sense of responsibility as the Supreme Father. And for that reason, he's coming down to try and set things right. In verses 25-32, basically Krishna is comparing the attached worker with the detached worker. And he is also describing how the detached person in knowledge should relate to one in ignorance. Exactly what constitutes ignorance is very vividly described in verse 27 and the purport. But you can't say it better than Prabhupada or Krishna, so we'll read from them. I'd like to read this whole purport because it's very, very instructive. So Krishna is saying, Prakrite kriyamana ni gunai kamani savashaha ahankara vimudatma kataham iti manyate. The spirit soul, bewildered by the influence of false ego, thinks himself the doer of activities that are in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. And then Prabhupada says in the purport, two persons, one in Krishna consciousness and the other in material consciousness, working on the same level, may appear to be working on the same platform, but there is a wide gulf of difference in their respective positions. The person in material consciousness is convinced by false ego that he is the doer of everything. He does not know that the mechanism of the body is produced by material nature, which works under the supervision of the Supreme Lord. The materialistic person has no knowledge that ultimately he is under the control of Krishna. The person in false ego takes all credit for doing everything independently, and that is a symptom of his nescience or ignorance. He does not know that this gross and subtle body is a creation of material nature under the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and as such, his bodily and mental activities should be engaged in the service of Krishna, in Krishna consciousness. The ignorant man forgets that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as Hrishikesh, or the master of the senses of the material body. For due to his long misuse of the senses and sense gratification, he is factually bewildered by the false ego, which makes him forget his eternal relationship with Krishna. So this is why Prabhupada calls the material realm a madhouse, because everybody is playing a role that is actually not their role, identifying as somebody that they're not. So if I don't know whether you've ever been into a madhouse, I used to sometimes do, when I was a teacher, I used to sometimes do programs there. But it's very interesting because there's incredible, quite often you find incredible level of intelligence in these places. But there's just something slightly not right about the mind. This doesn't function properly. And all of these people have this, their social dealings and everything. Everything is running like a normal society. But it's a nut house. So I always, even as a materialist, I remember being really struck by this. That, you know, these people are crazy, but they think they're sane and they're acting within what looks like a sane framework, you know. But it's just a small module of what we are doing ourselves in the material realm. It is a nut house. How a Krishna conscious devotee should deal with those in ignorance is very expertly explained by Srila Prabhupada in his purport to both 26 and 29. Let's have a look at 26 first. It's about 10 lines down. About 9, 10 lines down. This is verse 26. A self-realized soul in Krishna consciousness should not disturb others in their activities or understanding, but he should act by showing how the results of all work can be dedicated to the service of Krishna. The learned Krishna-conscious person may act in such a way that the ignorant person working for sense gratification may learn how to act and how to behave. This is a very subtle but very powerful form of preaching, where you're not speaking by your words, you're speaking by your actions. Very, very powerful. Prabhupada takes it a step further in his last paragraph of the Purport 29. This is very, very much in the mood of Prabhupada, as is evident in his early days in US. Men who are ignorant cannot appreciate activities in Krishna consciousness, and therefore Lord Krishna advises us not to disturb them and simply waste valuable time. But the devotees of the Lord are more kind than the Lord because they understand the purpose of the Lord. Consequently, they undertake all kinds of risks, even to the point of approaching ignorant men to try to engage them in acts of Krishna consciousness, which are absolutely necessary for the human being. So Prabhupada is taking it that further step, that, Krishna is saying we don't disturb them, we just show by our example. But if we're not merciful to them, who's going to be merciful to them? So let's be merciful. Give them a good shake. That's what he has done. I find verse 30 very interesting verse, because Prabhupada tells us in the first line of the purport to this that this is actually indicating the purpose of the Gita. So we can get some further illumination of what Krishna has in mind in speaking Gita by having a look at this. Krishna is saying, Maya Sabani Kamani Sanyasya Dhyatma Chetasa Nirashya Nirmamo Bhutva Yudhyasva Vigata Jvaraha. Therefore, O Arjun, surrendering all your works unto me, with full knowledge of me, without desires for profit, and with no claims for proprietorship, and free from lethargy, fight. And Prabhupada says in the purport, This verse clearly indicates the purpose of the Bhagavad Gita. The Lord instructs that one has to become fully Krishna conscious to discharge duties, as if in military discipline. Such an injunction may make things a little difficult. Nevertheless, duties must be carried out with dependence on Krishna, because that is the constitutional position of the living entity. The living entity cannot be happy independent of the cooperation of the Supreme Lord, because the eternal constitutional position of the living entity is to become subordinate to the desires of the Lord. And then about 10 lines down, the cashier may count millions of dollars for his employer, but he does not claim a cent for himself. Similarly, one has to realize that nothing in the world belongs to any individual person, but that everything belongs to the Supreme Lord. That is a real purport of Mayi, or unto me. And when one acts in such Krishna consciousness, certainly he does not claim proprietorship over anything. This consciousness is called Mimama, or nothing is mine. So it's this kind of purport that Prabhupada indicates a little more clearly the mentality of Krishna, that we get the very strong understanding that Bhagavad Gita is essentially meant to kickstart the heart. Do you know what that means? You're familiar with that term of kickstart? When you have a car that's stalled, it's cold, you can't get the car to start. So sometimes the driver will sit in the car and someone will push, and then the driver will put it in the second or third gear, a higher gear than you usually would start a car. And sometimes it catches and the car starts. So it's called kickstarting a car. So in the same way, we are not in the position where we're acting Krishna consciously. You know, we've got everything back to front, inside out. So Krishna is saying, okay, let's give it a try. We'll try and kickstart it. Try and get it going the way it's supposed to go. So this kind of purport, Krishna is giving us a further insight that if you do it this way, then you're acting according to your constitutional position. Huh? It's not the swinging of the pendulum that we spoke about the other day, which is the natural condition of the conditioned soul. In verses 31 and 32, Krishna is explaining the result of following his advice that he gives in 31 and of not following it, which he gives in 32. The result of following his advice about how to work in Krishna consciousness is that one becomes free from bondage. And the result of not doing it is that those who don't follow his advice will be ruined in their endeavors for perfection. Prabhupada's purport to this verse, to 32, is quite a heavy one. It's worth us having a look at. The flaw of not being Krishna conscious is clearly stated herein. As there is punishment for disobedience to the order of the Supreme Executive Head, so there is certainly punishment for disobedience to the order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A disobedient person, however great he may be, is ignorant of his own self and of the Supreme Brahman, Paramatma, and the Personality of Godhead, due to a vacant heart. Therefore, there is no hope of perfection of life for him. So it's a very vivid simile that Prabhupada is using here. For such a person who is in ignorance, he has a vacant heart. So it's basically like a robot walking around. There's nothing in the heart. There's just this external activity. It's a very powerful simile that's been used. In verses 33 to 35, we see that Krishna is concluding what he has to say in this section. In essence, he tells Arjuna that repression of his nature is not the answer. Regulative principles are. Therefore, he should perform his prescribed duties faithfully, according to the proper regulative principles, according to his vana and ashram. And then everything will be fine. As I said at the beginning, this third chapter, being a implementation chapter, is nothing really terribly complex about it philosophically. You may have some questions. Does anyone have any questions on what I've spoken now? Interesting question. This is a very interesting question. Other people may like to also comment on this. I'll just make the immediate comment that came to my mind. Is that Janaka, King Janaka is listed, mentioned here because he is so expert. So his understanding of Kshatriya code is not only working in terms of he knows the detail, but he knows the subtleties. So his occupational duty at his level is to hear Bhagavatam. He's at that level. He's a self-realized soul. He's the father of Sita Devi. He knows that his right-hand man is more than capable of dealing with it, and it's more suitable to him as a duty. It's a very subtle thing. Actually, there's a number of angles of vision we could take it from. In terms of Lokachar, what you're saying is true, and there are instances even in Ram's life where he did what was obviously necessary, externally necessary to placate people. But I was looking at it in terms of reason. I told the story was more in terms of ourselves as devotees, because we still tend to be so much governed by passion. We tend to misidentify what is our real duty. We don't get the balance of the duties sometimes properly situated. So I was more inspired from that angle of vision. But what you're saying is interesting. It would. They do. Yeah. But that's why Prabhupada is saying in the purport that the general person does need to see practical example of good leadership. And I think this is something we should think about in terms of ourselves, because sometimes we have a tendency to look at the leaders and say there's some limitation there. But we should remember that as representatives of Prabhupada, we all have a leadership role to play. It may be bigger or smaller, but we all have that place to play. So if we can look at ourselves and see how can I refine my understanding of what my role is in terms of leadership, that's an important thing. One thing that I always remember, it's a Kami saying, but Prabhupada perfected it. He showed the perfection of it. You can always tell a great man by how well he does the small things. You know, that someone who's actually great, they do, even the, you know, when they stop and talk to an ordinary street person or whatever they do, that maybe seen as a very small thing, but they'll do it first class. You know, Prabhupada was expert in this way. Whoever he met, he'd remember their name, you know, their situation. That's the fact. Maya's busy keeping us busy. just to be able to stop and to assess what is the best thing for me to do, it takes quite some effort, actually. And some bravado. Not a bravado, it's the wrong word. Some bravery. Just to, you know, decide that, yes, I'm going to stop and look at my life and see what I need to do. It's a very important point. Yeah. Are there any other questions? Yeah. When you have devotees who work very, very hard, but in that process of working very hard, they may lose some of the quality or some of the proper mood of devotion. So then what is the destination of that kind of person?
Like you said, there's little things that count.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Krishna always sees our endeavor, that's from his side, but from our side, we should always be striving to improve that endeavor. For a Kanista, and it's not an improper situation, for a Kanista, the emphasis is more on activity and the amount of activity. But what distinguishes between a Kanista and a Madhyam is that the Madhyam starts to become concerned with quality. This is actually the deciding factor. The Madhyam is concerned with quality of dealings, both with the deity, with Krishna's energies, with other devotees, quality in terms of how they apply themselves to their service, everything. You know, like they just become more... It gets back to what we were talking about before, when these two first leaves come up, how we deal with it. If we externalize it and become proud and become critical of others, then it becomes, it actually withers up those first two leaves. But with the Madhyam, that person, that critical mentality turns around on themselves and they see the limitations. They'll see it in others, that they reflect it back on themselves. So they'll see this person cooking, and just to get the thing done on time, they're mixing bhog with prasad and all sorts of things. So they're not going to spend, unless they're a manager and they have responsibility to correct it. But if they're not a manager, they're going to turn it around on themselves and say, okay, you know, how's that manifest? I'm picking up on that. You see, when you pick up on something, it means there's something in you that's reflecting on it. If you haven't got somehow or other that same weakness in yourself, you won't pick it up. Usually people who've got the same weaknesses as you've got are the ones that annoy you, isn't it? So, you know, the Majjhima will turn it round and say, okay, how is this manifest to me? What do I do in my day that has the same mentality? How can I correct that? So what you're saying is do. What you're saying is good. Like, be observant. Don't cut out that discriminatory power. Krishna's given to it for a reason. But be careful how you use it. If you turn it out and you criticize the devotees, or you create some kind of... You may do it in a proper manner even. You may go on, you know, this one's doing that, like that. But still, the repercussion will be that there'll be some hardening of heart for you. But if you consider, if you're not in a position of authority where it's your duty to fix it, if instead of being concerned with what they're doing, turn it around, look at what's there for me to learn from this. This is a very important point. What you've raised is very, very important if we want to come to the Majjhima platform. We have to start seeing the limitations in ourselves. We have to see the lack of refinement in ourselves. You know? He may slam a door, but what am I doing that's not so nice in my dealings with the material energy? You know what I mean? It's a very subtle thing, but one we have to come to terms with. Others may have comment. Pavati? That's an interesting point. Anybody else have anything to say on that point? Yeah? I appreciate your point. There's only one thing I would balance it a little bit with, and that is that you have to check your heart very carefully before you do that. Because if there's any slight tinge of self assertion or any slight tinge of envy, you get yourself into, you know, that story of the dog in the fly paper. You know that story? The dog, he was trying to get to some food, and somebody had put some fly paper down. So he really wanted what was on the other side of the fly paper. So he thought, well, I'll try. It's sort of like a paper that's sticky, catches flies, it also catches dogs. And so he really wanted that food on the other side of the paper, you know. So he put one paw down, and, you know, he's still got three, no problem. Oh, somehow or other I'll get the food. But then he put the one paw down and it got stuck. So then he tried to use the other paw to get the other paw off, and then he had two stuck, you know. And in the end, all four were stuck. So I appreciate very much your point, that if we really feel, honestly, I am clean-heartedly doing this for this person's benefit, if we actually feel that, like really honestly feel that, then go for it. If we don't, if we feel like, you know, there's something unclean about our vision of what's happening there, then better to turn it on ourselves and see what we can do in our own hearts. I appreciate your point, but just that should be there. It can so quickly backfire. You know, like Krishna. What you've basically described is a society based on Vaishya principle. When you're talking about on Vaishya principle, you're talking like productivity and this kind of things, then it's not really looking at the heart of the matter. And when we're looking at devotees, there has to be some practicality there, but where we can find that the devotee has the interest and they have the skills, those two things match, then there will be a nice result for Krishna. So if we can sort of, instead of just like moving devotees around, management doesn't mean taking care of a go-down. You just move things around. You know, we're managing devotees. We're managing devotees' lives. So, you know, if someone has that mentality that they're just moving blocks around, then they should take care of a go-down. They shouldn't take care of devotees. someone who has sensitivity, someone who understands these are people who have given their lives to Krishna, that person can manage devotees. Someone who just sees them as, you know, a facility to get things done, that person should manage a godown. That's my personal feeling. I've seen a lot of devotees abused in this way. Okay, I want to move on. Yesterday, we saw some real creativity in the class. It was in preparation for tomorrow's drama. So, I tell you quite frankly, when I first, the first week I was with this group, as a group, the first thing, the quality that struck me about the group as a whole was that these devotees aren't superficial. These devotees are thinkers. That was the immediate impression I got. And I'm working with a group of people who think. And that was a great inspiration to me. So yesterday I saw another side of you, which was also very enlivening, spontaneous creativity. I think we had a good time. But tomorrow I want to see us put both sides together. This ability to think a little deeper than most, and that spontaneous creativity. So as we mentioned briefly yesterday, we want you tomorrow to work in the same groups as you worked in yesterday. We've got a few new devotees here that weren't here yesterday. We can fit them into the groups as they feel comfortable.